south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Just a little announcement before we get started. If you've been getting any emails or promotions from an old site I used to be associated with, Expat Wisdom, don't pay attention to them. I'm not affiliated with them in any way. Okay, so let's start with an email. Dear Johnny, on your show you tell us all about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Then maybe some of us sitting on the fence will fall off in the right direction. I, for one, just cannot believe how bad it's getting here in Minnesota. I can't see how anyone would ever want to try to start a business, much less as for me, since I'm a contractor, why anyone would ever try to get into the building trades or construction business at all. Unless, of course, you were a minority, then you'd be in the chips. You know, there's never a shortage of government work. They have buildings going up all the time. And who do you think gets first shot at that work? But let's not go there. In fact, I'm ready to give up. My last two projects were stopped dead in the water. That's kind of a pun because it was about water. Here's something you probably didn't know, Johnny. Nowadays, guess who's liable if there's any future drainage damage from a property or construction site? Well, it's not the homeowner, it's the home builder. In other words, you could follow all the thousands of rules and regulations in building any kind of property, a house, a church, strip mall, whatever, get all the right permits and final inspections, follow the letter of the law exactly, and then, 10 or 20 years down the line, get your ass sued because of some drainage problem that you never caused, but nature did on its own. Get this now. Up to 1997, we had a kind of a loose rule called point drainage regulations, meaning you had to design the general drainage off the roof and the property itself to the existing natural flow and drainage depending on the topography in the area. Back then, it was very easy to figure out the general lay of the land and where the natural gradient flow and runoff should be. It's what farmers have been doing for centuries. You know, so after a storm, there's no standing water, no washing away of the topsoil, etc. But now we have what they call general drainage regulations, which means the builder and the homeowner are responsible for every single drop of water that drops off a roof or flows off your land until it gets to its final destination, which could be the water table itself, a collecting pond or reservoir, a river, stream, or lake, or a neighbor's property. Now remember, we're not talking about sewage or gray water. We're talking about rainwater flowing off your roof through your downspouts and water that's flowing off your land. Yes, that's fair. We have to take that into account. Suppose there's a storm and the water is diverted off your roof onto your driveway and it sweeps down into a narrow little channel on the side of the road. It gets bigger and bigger. And before you know it, it becomes a pretty big-sized channel running through your neighbor's front yard. And if it seeps into his foundation, well, you've got trouble. Have you seen that? Probably not, because it rarely happens. We do, you know, build considering 50 and 100-year floodplains. However, now, every single thing we do and every house we build that's not inside a planned community needs to have an environmental impact study or statement. Yes, every year there are newer and more expensive environmental regulations that we have to comply with. But do you want to know the straw that broke the camel's back, at least for me? It's always been the case that contractors were responsible for any direct water damage as it flows onto another person's property. And that does make sense, it seems right. But things have gotten really crazy. Now, contractors and owners alike are not only liable for the water that drains off the property itself and onto another, we're now liable for any damage from water that might come onto the property from an adjacent property and then flows on to yet another property and damages it. Did you get that logic, Johnny? That means you could have a project that's been designed perfectly, the water drainage absolutely correct. However, if water flows onto your property from an adjacent property and continues on through your property and flows onto another property and damages it, you are liable for that damage, even though the drainage water did not initiate from your property. Now, you'd think the ultimate responsibility would be from where the water originated, but that's not the case. Suppose the water that does the damage does not originate from a house or a construction project, but comes from bad drainage on a boulevard, street, or even a city or state park. As long as the water moves through your yard and then moves on to another person's yard and does some damage, you're the one who's going to get sued. Oh, sure, you can turn around and sue the government because that's where the water originated in the first place. Just be prepared to pull out a lot of $100 bills because it's going to cost you a ton and a lot of days in court. So even if you win, you lose. In fact, I have two contractor friends who were in that very situation. One guy won, and it cost him $60,000, and the other guy is still dragging through court, and now he's got his earth-moving machines up for auction. He's gone bankrupt. Again, Johnny, it's impossibly difficult to go into the building and construction business in the U.S. these days. And truthfully, no one can really keep up with the rules, norms, and regulations. They're piling on new ones all the time. In fact, I can pretty much prove that at least 20 to 25% of any building job involves so-called water management and environmental impact issues. Sadly enough, almost none of that stuff existed 25 or so years ago. When I was young, Johnny, if I'd have known what the construction business was going to turn into, I'd have never taken over the old man's business. Instead, I'd have bought a Subway franchise. In fact, they even give university degrees out in storm water management. If they'd have predicted that back in my father's day, that would have drawn a big laugh. But man, it's serious business, let me tell you. So where am I at now? Well, I've been listening to your show a long time now, and I'm one of those guys who's been sitting on the fence. I just need a tiny little push to shove me on the side that's south of the border. Oh, and Johnny, notice that I didn't even bring up the fact that in almost all U.S. states, it's now illegal to collect your own rainwater. Now, if that isn't the stupidest thing you've ever heard. Not to say that anyone I know up here in Minnesota collects their own rainwater, but I can certainly see in the near future it's going to be in a lot of people's minds. Oh, and did I mention that the building and construction business throughout the U.S. is mostly in the crapper? Save for those certain little artificial islands of prosperity like Washington, D.C. Every dime that flows through that place was tapped from the wallet of a person who has a real job. And finally, Johnny, did you know that last year in the state of Minnesota, there were over 3,000 environmental drainage suits filed against property owners? Almost all of them not filed by individuals, but by the state. So, Johnny, coming back full circle here, come on, give us some more of the good about Latin America. Tell us more of what it feels like to live there. I've heard you talk over and over again about the Latin happiness factor. But you're talking about Latins. What about gringos? What's their happiness factor? That's it for now, Johnny. I really do plan on attending your next seminar. However, things are getting rougher and rougher financially. Your sign-up sheet shows a big discount for double occupancy. I was wondering if I come down, can you hook me up with another single person to share as a double and get that discount? No hanky-panky, of course. Oh, and I almost forgot. You often talk about people in the States being extremely stressed out. You don't know how true that is. There's another very stressful component that private business owners like myself never talk about, but it affects us almost every day. Would you believe the simple act of a mailman delivering his snail mail elicits a certain amount of stress? Not for him, but for me and I think all business owners. We do live in a particularly litigious society. I'd say the average contractor like me gets sued two or three times a year. That never happened prior to the 1990s, but it's a fact of life and you have to deal with it. I mean, hell, Johnny, about 4 months ago I got sued by a lady because cracks began to appear in her flagstone fireplace, and I didn't even install it. Another company did it, but they included me in the lawsuit. The more the merrier, right? So she sued them, she sued me, and the guy in turn sued me, so I got a double whammy out of it and it wasn't even my fault. And on and on. It seems like the lawyers have trained people to sue first and ask questions later. So anyway, that extra little bit of stress that no one seems to talk about is when the mailman comes and hands you the snail mail. The first thing you do if you're a private business owner is you look at the corner return address and keep your fingers crossed and hope it's not coming from a law firm. And if it is, it's like Russian roulette. Is it a bill? Is it an announcement? Or is it a warning, summons, or deposition notice? Oh, and they want to have a meeting to settle out of court. That's easy money. Oh, I tell you, Johnny, I've been there. Every contractor has. Sometimes I wish I could set up a meeting and send in a suicide bomber. But really, what's so sad about all this is that my father, Stanley, was a general contractor too. He built countless single-family homes after the baby boom started, from about 1955 to 1980. And in all that time, he'd only been sued twice. Once by his first wife and once by his second. You see, he was a workaholic. but he never, ever got sued by a client. Johnny, we're living in a different world. That's why I say, tell me something good. Tell me something nice. I really need to hear that right now. Thanks for all you do. Hope to see you at the seminar. Signing off, Sad Sandy. Okay, Sandy, I can understand your frustration because down here in Latin America, if you have some land, some property, whatever, you can do what you want with your water. It's your water. You can collect it all day long. You can bottle it and sell it if you want. And as far as so-called environmental impact studies, well, those are only forced on first world companies who come in and build big first world subdivisions or shopping malls, hotels, hospitals, high-rise residential towers and such. But again, the rules and regulations are probably 30 years or so behind the first world. So when you do an environmental impact study down here, it's very uncomplicated. That's not to say it won't take a while. Everything down here does. Could take some months because this is Latin America and everybody's on mañana time. Which is again why you'll need a personal lawyer who's your friend who can grease the palms of these guys, not to shove through something that wouldn't pass muster, but just to get these guys off their dead asses. Because down here, you know, when you say ASAP, for Latins that means this month sometime. Maybe. And that's for the private sector. When you're dealing with government, well, you got to be on them all the time. And you know, everybody says, Johnny, why is it so? To which I say, get some boots on the ground and walk into a government office sometime, and you'll see exactly what I mean. If you can get past the huge line outside the door, you'll see monumental chaos, disorganization, stacks of papers everywhere, and you'll even see a couple of real typewriters from the old days. If you bought one from an antique joint and have it on display in your hallway like an old rustic artifact, you got taken. Down here, practically every family's got one packed away in the closet, right next to the Parcheesi game and the rabbit ears. Remember those? So, Sandy, sounds like you're a little bit down and you want to hear some of the good, not the bad and the ugly. Now, you mentioned happiness. Well, let me say a little bit about that in regards to gringos. Now, as far as I'm concerned, there's two kinds of happiness, maybe more, but I can point out two. One is the kind of fleeting, materialistic happiness you get when you buy a new car. You know, you love that thing for about a month, and then after 2 months, it's, well, just kind of transportation, isn't it? Unless someone compliments you and tells you how great your car is, then once again, you get a little bit of that happiness back. But it's only fleeting. Same thing goes if you get a new iPad or a computer. And ladies, of course, that works for shoes. But it is fleeting, right? That kind of thing is fleeting. You know what it's like. You know what I'm talking about. But let me tell you, down here where I'm sitting right now, I'm looking out the window and I see a big avocado tree packed with fruit. In fact, it's fallen on the ground and I'll have to pick it up and start giving it away as usual. And next to that, a tree just loaded with lemons, not to mention oranges, tangerines, mangoes, bananas. And you know, every time I look at one of those things, I feel happy. And a few hours later, the next day, the next week, when I look out the window, I feel happy again. It's not diminished. It's not fleeting. The happiness lasts. So when I'm feeling kind of neutral or blah, just look out the window or take a walk in the yard, and once again, I'm happy. It's the same level of happiness I had last week and last month. Then maybe the next day, I'll look out the window and see a pair of toucans. I feel happy. A couple days later, I'll see them again. Same feeling. Happy again. It's not diminished. It's not scaled down. You longtime listeners know I often broadcast from the coffee fields. And I'll tell you, a couple times a year, just for a day or two, the coffee bushes are flowering, and they're all white and silvery for as far as the eye can see. How can you not smile at that? It does make you happy. And when it happens again, I feel happy again. It's not diminished. And when I drive up to my house, I catch a glimpse of the solar hot water heater up there, and man, do I feel happy. Not only am I catching energy from the sun, but I'm getting over on the man, you know, the electric company and such. Yep, every time I drive up and see that, I'm happy. It doesn't diminish. It's not less today compared to yesterday when I first pulled in and saw it. Now, in my yard, I also have a big tree, and all it does is flower. Man, does it flower. No fruit, but some tremendous flowers. And every morning, like clockwork, a half a dozen hummingbirds appear and zoom around that tree and hit all those flowers for 3 or 4 minutes. And you know what? That makes me happy. And every day when it happens, I get the same feeling. It doesn't diminish. It's not the kind of fleeting happiness you get when you buy a new gadget. Oh, and speaking about catching your own rainwater, I've got a really good rainwater retrieval system here where all I have to do is flip a lever and all the water gets diverted to a 4-inch drainage pipe into an underground cistern. I always keep it filled, but I've never had to use it yet. It's just insurance. although I do drain it about every 6 to 8 months and have the gardener water the plants with it, because, you know, you shouldn't leave water sitting stagnant like that for an extended period of time. However, I do throw in a cap full of chlorine bleach about once a month to eliminate any mold or bacteria. And by the way, if you're ever going to use that water for drinking, you're going to run it through your ceramic and charcoal filtering system anyway, and that'll remove just about everything. But the point is, when I look at that valve and that 4-inch pipe that's leading off the roof down into the underground cistern, that makes me happy. And every time I look at it and think about what it does, the happiness does not diminish. So, bottom line, in our little Latin American universe, there are countless things that'll make you happy, things that you'll never get to experience up north. It might be your view of the ocean or a volcano that's smoking 50 miles away. A lot of us gringos have spectacular views like that, and it never fails to make you happy. Of course, the poor, sweaty masses living on the side of the volcano have even a better view. However, they're not nearly as happy about that eruption as we are. But they're there because the land's cheap, or in fact free. But you knew that already, right? Oh, and let's not forget that Sandy mentioned he has a certain amount of anxiety and stress every time he goes to the mailbox and looks at the snail mail, thinking there just might be a killjoy letter from an attorney in the box. Well, down here, happiness strikes again because the mailman does not generally come to your door. Why? Well, as I mentioned in a past show, addresses are way too hard to find and often not posted at all. By the way, one of the only good reasons to own a smartphone down here is for one of those GPS location apps like Waze. They're invaluable when you're looking for something. The rest of the time, just turn the damn thing off and use a dumb phone. But the point is, you can remain very, very anonymous and have a very small footprint, especially if you live slightly out of the city limits, because no one's going to be able to find your house, not even a mailman, unless you tell them or show them. All right, then what about your mail? As I said in previous shows, you let your lawyer be your mailbox, or you hook up with one of the local mailbox, etc. type services. By the way, stay tuned for an update on mail, mailboxes, ordering from Amazon, and all that. Okay, let's really change gears now. It's a fact that us first world people are very leery of Muslims, and Latins have an even worse opinion. In fact, I've never met a single Latin person who's had anything good to say about Muslims. And when Latins see a Muslim in a shopping center or whatever, they instantly think they're nuts for wearing a burqa, since this is the tropics, you know. You see, Latins don't understand them, they don't understand their customs or traditions, they don't learn anything about them in school, and the fact that they're not Christians is the topper. Latin American society is about 98% Christian, and they have an innate distrust of anyone who's not. That said, let me lay this email on you. This comes from Ross. He says, last year when I was at the Guatemalan immigration office, there were two women in burqas. I suppose they were seeking Guatemalan residency. I was surprised. Looks to be a trend. He enclosed a link to an article about how Muslims seem to be flooding into Latin America like they are everywhere else. It's from Breitbart, a cool alternative website, and I want to read a couple of excerpts for you. But first, I want to mention that in the past 5 or 6 months, I've gotten some emails on the subject of Muslims. One person reported he saw something like 15 Muslims at the Managua, Nicaragua airport when he arrived. And a gringo lady emailed me from Panama and said that she saw a big double-decker tour bus completely filled with Muslims. Must have been 50 or so women in burqas on that bus. She said, what are they doing in Panama? Now, as far as I can see, the women make no effort to blend in, but the guys, they try to be as Western as possible. In fact, I mentioned in a previous show that if you look at them from the back, they look just like, well, almost gringos. They dress in Levi's and Tommy Hilfiger and all that. That would be the men. But the women, they have those burqas and they appear to be completely under the thumb of their macho men counterparts. Anyway, let me read this from Breitbart. And I'll paraphrase here. The title is, Muslim population in Latin America grows 25% amid radicalization concerns. This is very recent, August 24th. It says, Islam has an estimated 3 million adherents in Latin America and the Caribbean as of the end of 2015. An increase of 25%, says the U.S. State Department. According to the data, in 2015, there were concentrations of Muslims across the following regions. Number one, Brazil with 1.5 million Muslims. By far the greatest Muslim population in all of Latin America. Number two, Argentina, with 750,000 Muslims. Number three, Colombia, with 10,000 plus Muslims. Venezuela, with 100,000 Muslims. Panama, with 14,000. Suriname, of all places, with 81,000. Okay, it's me, Johnny, here. I'd venture to say that not one in 1,000 gringos even knows where Suriname is. People I've mentioned that to up in the States usually think it's in Africa, at least ones that have never traveled outside the country. Well, let me tell you, Suriname's in South America, and it's not a nice place. Unless you like rain, heat, humidity, mudslides, and unpaved roads. Just my opinion. Anyway, on top of that, according to the statistics I just gave you, one out of every 6 people in Suriname is a Muslim. So if you're okay with that, I guess you're okay with that. And you know, talking about the islands of Trinidad and Tobago in the Caribbean, I know that's not Latin America, but it's close. Picture this. 1 out of 20 people living there is a Muslim. Again, you gotta wonder, how'd that happen? And why even mention it? Well, because Navy Admiral Kurt Tidd, T-I-D-D, Chief of U.S. Southern Command, revealed earlier this year that hundreds of Muslims from primarily the Caribbean islands of Trinidad and Tobago have traveled to the Middle East to fight on behalf of ISIS. On top of that, Latin countries with huge Muslim populations like Brazil, over 1 million, have taken in thousands of Syrian refugees already. Okay, so those are the facts, but there's one thing they mention in this article I totally disagree with. Guy probably never had any boots on the ground. In the wake of the Orlando terrorist attack by jihadists who primarily targeted Latinos, remember that one? Turns out, Deputy Secretary General of the Islamic Circle of North America, let's see if I can get this one, Wahshaba Sayeb, told Breitbart News that the relationship between Hispanics and Muslims in Latin America is strong. What? Boy, is that guy an idiot. He's obviously never overheard Latins expressing their real opinions about Muslims to each other. Well, I have. Now, this might sound wrong to some people, but I've heard Latin parents, especially the Latin daddy, say that if his daughter brought a Muslim date home for dinner, her bags would be packed and on the front porch in a, quote, Nueva York minuto. Oh, and by the way, few people call them Muslims or Musulman down here, which is really the correct term. Instead, they call them Arabis, Arab in English. At least that's what the middle and lower middle classes call them, which makes up around 80 to 90% of the Latin public. Anyway, if you have boots on the ground, you'll find out soon enough that Muslims and Latinos don't mix. Except, of course, in business. When it comes to money and commerce, anything goes. As long as everybody's happy and making a living and such. But if you're talking about voluntary social mixing, well, that's not going to happen. Now, keep in mind, when I previously listed Latin countries and their Muslim populations, quite a few Latin countries didn't even make the list, like Paraguay, Chile, Peru, Costa Rica, Honduras, Guatemala, and a few others. Well, that's because those countries have a statistically insignificant number of Muslims. In fact, in a past show, you might remember that the whole country of Guatemala has just 2 mosques. Whereas my home state of Illinois, with just about as large a population, has over 100 mosques. Now, I'm in and out of Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador a lot. And I have to admit, in the last year or two, in those 3 countries, I've probably seen 7 ladies with burqas. And guess where I saw them? At the immigration offices. Just as Ross mentioned, he saw a few burqas at the Guatemalan immigration office. But you know, the immigration office in any country is exactly the place you're going to see all kinds of foreigners. They're the ones trying to get their passports, residencies, and visas in order. Really, I'd say you should be surprised if you don't see a virtual United Nations walking through that immigration office when you're there. Let me ask you this. Who else is going to be there waiting in those lines? Latins? Guatemalans? Hondurans? No, it's their country. They never have to go to their own immigration office, because they all hold their own country passports and ID cards and are obtained at a different office completely. The immigration office is 100% for foreigners. And that's who you're going to see in there. And if it doesn't look like the United Nations to you, then you're in the wrong place. In fact, last time I was there, I saw some do-gooders from Switzerland and some nuns from the Vatican and some Canadians. A French guy, 2 Russians, and even a guy from Bangladesh. Yep, Bangladesh. All there trying to get their visas renewed. So as it turns out, the countries I just mentioned, where they have very, very small Muslim populations, if you go to one of the big cities and ask a taxi driver, for example, to take you to the Muslim district, or the area of town that hosts the Middle Eastern population, you'll certainly get a blank stare because there ain't any. However, it's a completely different thing when you're talking about Brazil, Colombia, Argentina, or Venezuela, even Panama. In fact, these days, especially Panama. As it turns out, many Muslim countries are setting up trade missions to Panama. Why? Because of the Panama Canal, of course. Which is certainly why last time I was at Tucumán Airport, where I was stuck on a layover at the airport for 3 hours, I must have seen 50 Muslims in their native mixed with Western garb meandering around the airport. And speaking of Middle Eastern Muslim trade missions, get this. The Iranian Foreign Minister, Chancellor Mohammad Javad Zarif, is currently on a tour with his huge entourage through Latin America, intending to network and create business and economic partnerships with the following Latin countries. Write this down. Chile, Bolivia, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Panama. This is very recent news. Came out on August 22nd. In a statement, Iranian Chancellor Zarif announced the economic and diplomatic tour and his intentions to strengthen political and economic ties with the aforementioned countries and will be holding high-level talks with government officials and noted business leaders. Local experts say the Iranians have their eye on natural resources such as uranium deposits in Bolivia. So bottom line, all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes, if you really are concerned about the local Muslim population, of course some people care and some people don't, if it's troublesome to you, you should keep the aforementioned countries that have close Muslim affiliations in mind. Now for me, there's always been a simple and easy way to figure out how much of a Muslim population is in a particular country. When you're at an international airport, just note the mix of burqas versus the regular Latin population at the arrival gate, or do a burqa count at one of the big popular malls. Okay, so we're getting near the end of the show now. Don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com to get in on that early bird discount for my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar that'll be held in and around Guatemala. We're about 3/4 filled up already, so get that plan B going. Time's a wasted. Finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. It's fun, it's easy. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.